I've got apologies here. My co-chairperson, Honorable Make, is writing examination. And we also have three other apologies. Mr. Pretorius, Mr. Manir, and official from the department, Mr. Adomo. Unfortunately, he's on another task. So we would request the chief of the Air Force, is it Lieutenant General Khakiano? That's right. Yeah, just to introduce the entourage. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Good morning again to everyone. Can I introduce my team with me? On my left, I have Brigadier General Masters, which is the Director, HR Services. On his left, Major General Missy Mung, which is Chief Director, Air Policy and Plans. Right behind me is the Deputy Chief of the Air Force. Perhaps if you followed the events of the last month, the ministers have now appointed deputy chiefs. And this is our deputy chief, Major General Malinga. He's mainly responsible for the day-to-day operations of the Air Force. On his left is Major General Kumalo, which is responsible for force preparation. On his left is Colonel Hilton Smith. He's responsible at the strategic level for HR policies and plans. And on his left is Brigadier General Mbambo, who is our director Air Force plans. The team might look big to you, but we also have a dual role. We also attending the maritime, or some of us attending the maritime conference of Chief of the Navy, which is starting today. Can I perhaps, from your side, get an indication of time, whether I should accelerate, whether I should go through it, be provided the document, whether I can continue at the normal pace?
We will be out of here at between 9:30 and 9:45. So you can have 20 minutes of presentation, 25 minutes of presentation.
25 minutes. Fine. So then I will. We will have to accelerate through the slides, but I will then concentrate on the pertinent issues for you to contextualize and to emphasize the points we made in our paper. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If we can go to the next slide. Our aim then is to brief the Joint Standing Committee on Defence on the SAF's progress and challenges with the implementation of the transformational goals. And also, just a broad overview to give you some of our challenges. All these have been addressed in our annual report of last year. We will cover the SAF regulatory framework, which I will scale down substantially now. Our challenges in this specialist mustering, diversity management, and then finally some of our challenges. We had, since the 1996 defense review, we had envisaged a ratio of 40-30-30 in terms of the spending towards personnel, HR, operating and in the capital budget. However, if we go to the next slide, we will see that in effect this is not nearly realized. And we can see that the blue portion on the slide is our HR budget today, which is 67%. The red portion is for operating, but it's fixed cost, so there is nothing that we can do with that money. It's contracts, it's fixed. And that we have to plan for it in the beginning of the year. The green portion only 11% is discretionary funding, which we can do courses, buy fuel, and the like. So current situation being totally out of sync with what we intended to do. So with that being in mind, the SAF's main operational systems are entirely dependent upon flying hours to develop their personnel. Whenever there is a reduction in flying hours, it impacts on the force preparation hours, as neither the force employment nor training hours can be compromised. Just to explain the concept of force preparation and training. Training would be hours flown at the basic flying school, where people before the undergraduates, so to speak. And the force preparation will be the hours flown after they have graduated as a pilot, for instance. This impact on force preparation hours affects not only the pilot's development, but all the specialized or specialist musterings that provide operational support to us. And here I can name a few, such as the mission controllers, people that sit behind radar screens. They are also dependent on aircraft flying in order for them to get the necessary exposure and training. Next slide, please. As an introduction then, something on the service contracts. Pre-2002, we had a flexible service system, and then it was changed to a long-term service system, and people could then retire at 60. In 2002, the HR 2010, the MSDS came into being, and the intention was 2 years and to exit the members then after 2 years. But as you will see later, during that or after that, we started building up to a huge exodus out of the Air Force, and we'll show you a slide on that. So what the result is that we kept the majority of these MSDS members. Then there was, this was translated then further into a core service system where you could join for 1 year to 20 years contract on a selective non-renewal. And they were finally, there was a senior command service contract, which is a very small portion of this. We started off on the back foot because when we integrated in 1994, the SAF got very, very limited aviation qualified personnel out of the national, non-statutory forces or the TBVC air forces. Then, in terms of the regulatory framework, there are the mechanisms, and they are there from the promotion policy, the transformation policy, the fast tracking, recruitment. All those policies are in place. And we've recognized some phenomena that tend to avert or limit the effect of the policies, as it's mentioned over there. These could be improper planning, budgeting, non-compliance with policy, and unintended barriers. If we go to the next slide, we actually come to the heart of our problem. We have consistently striven to achieve representativity at all levels by recruiting additional 20% black candidates as pilots and navigators to enhance representativity in our core musterings. Core musterings, just to explain the term, it's a pilot navigator, engineers, technicians, and air traffic controllers. The female candidate recruitment also, we also increased to 30% in 2010. It was further increased to 40% to accelerate the representativity. In addition to these initiatives, a further 5% overall increase for black recruitment targets was set in 2003 in accordance with prevailing minimum periods in rank provisionings. But that will take us 14 years from entering to become a warrant officer. Now, this is 2004. If we go to the next slide, this is 2011. So the situation has improved. But it's only improved marginally in the two areas that are circled over there. It's very clear that on the bottom, the entry levels up to sergeant, we can clearly see there that we are oversubscribed intentionally in order to be able to feed Flight Sergeant Warrant Officers and Warrant Officer 1. So the ranks are on the left hand and or the vertical scale. It must also be remembered that the Captain, Major, Lieutenant Colonel ranks are also mostly recruited out of the Flight Sergeant Warrant Officer 2, Warrant Officer 1 environment. So the intention was then to feed that area and then to be able to fill the gaps. But what in effect what happened is that due to the contract and the decision at the time not to renew or to exit personnel, all the people sitting in that post, because Warrant Officer Flight Sergeant, Warrant Officer 2 and Warrant Officer 1 are post dependent. So if there's not a post, nobody can get promotion. So now we're stuck because of that we can't get the people out of those posts. They're going to stay till 60, and there's no way to exit them. Well, the result is that we've now hit the ceiling, so to speak, in terms of we okay up till sergeant, where it's dependent on year and rank, and only course qualified to get promotion there. But from there onwards, where it's post-related, and if you can't get the top-level ones out, that the bottom can't come in. And this is the dilemma. So the bottom circle and the top one is very related to one another and basically the same problem. Fast-tracking, as is required by our regulatory framework, we must have a fast-tracking policy, which we have, and we actively manage this. And on an annual basis, we have our fast-tracking plan. As I've said, the promotion to sergeant does not require vacant post, but it only needs to be course qualified. What has happened also now, we will fast-track people, and we can even course qualify them. But then there's no post for the individual, and we can't get, I think writ is not a very nice word, but we can't exit the ones that we need to replace to correct our representativity. In terms of our fast tracking, on the next slide please, we have our fast tracking boards annually. The functional directors present their members to the board, which is chaired previously by the General Officer Commanding, now by the Deputy Chief of the Air Force. Successful nominees' names are entered into the fast-tracking database. They must contract to achieve a set of developmental goals. They receive preferential course attendance. Once they qualify, they can be promoted out of turn or even before completing the promotion policy's minimum period in rank. This was formally instituted throughout the SANDF in 2004. If we go to the next slide, it's just to give Chair, yourself and the Honourable Members a feeling of the minimum period in rank. And we can see in this slide on the left hand, we have two distinct tiers. We have the NCO tier on the left hand side, and on the right hand side, the officers one. And the non-commissioned officers, the one on the left tier, which roughly corresponds to civilian responsibility progression from operators to supervisors, and the commissioned officers tier, which roughly corresponds to civilian management responsibility progression. Members earn the right to be commissioned through a combination of functional and officers' formative courses qualifications, and the NCO tier feeds both the senior NCO's rank, as I've explained before, and the officers' rank. If we go to the next slide, this is an indication of our attrition over the last 4 years. And Chairperson, you can see the volatility that we've had here from 0708, where we lost 804 people, 0809, where we lost 1,347, and then it started decreasing. 0910, 478, 385, and up till now we have lost this financial year, we've lost 229 people. And you can see in this period, we basically had a turnover of a third of the Air Force, which in itself, being a very technological sort of organization, you can imagine the impact it had on us. Coupled to this, we can say that the SAF then has, however, not been able to recover from the scarcity losses of 2008. And this is partly due to the slowdown in the development emanating from the reduced operating budget and inadequate funding of all operational and support systems. The major factor that has and is continuing to reduce the SAF's attrition rate is the slowdown in the world economy, which tends to have a greater impact on national aviation industry than on the general national economy, and our minister's successes in improving the conditions of service of the SANDF members. However, the reduced flying rate is having a morale impact on all the specialist mustering, and any slight upturn in the national or international economy could once more lead to the increase in losses with the South specialist mustering. With specific reference to pilots, the SAF is anticipating that if flying hours do not move back up, then a number of pilots will leave in spite of the improved conditions of service. Over the last number of years, about 5 years, the flying rate and the predicted flying rate for up to next year would have decreased by almost 50%. And in anybody's language, Jefferson, that is quite significant. We can go to the next slide, slide 14. In terms of the regulatory framework, the enhancement of black middle management, it's been safe to say that the SAF's recruitment strategy helped to improve representativity overall, but had no or very little impact at the middle management level. The practice of placing newly commissioned officers in ranks which did not recognize their years as NCOs meant they remained junior officers for an extensive period. The SAF sought to overcome this through proposing an initiative that would give newly commissioned black officers recognition for the years that they served as NCOs. However, this has some effect on the number of blacks available for senior NCOs posts. And if you can recall the two circles on the graph, these two are very closely related because the one feeds off the other. The exit mechanisms, I have touched on it, Chairperson. The attrition, especially at senior level, affects the staff's ability to speed up the rate of transformation. Although the mobility and exit mechanism, or for short, the MEM, is an employee initiative exit mechanism, it requires the individual's acceptance. So most senior members under 55 years are reluctant to accept the package because of the limitations of the GEPF's rule. And as I've mentioned, voluntary resignations have also dropped off substantially. Then the unintended barriers, again, the absence of a compulsory exit mechanism impedes rank mobility, as most of the senior NCOs have long-term service contracts. The minister, the previous minister, prohibited the selection of the non-renewal of short-term and medium-term contracts, and that also had a major effect on us. The rank mobility became impeded because the lack of vacant senior NCOs and officers posts. Of course, backlogs prevented the promotion of junior NCOs, and the initiative to enhance black middle management in 2005 contributed to the decreased black candidates available for senior supervisors. Again, I would just want to stress the two circles on the one of the previous slides. The officers feed on the NCOs, but the NCOs need to sustain themselves as well. If we go to this slide 17, Chairperson, you will see that this gives you an indication of the course backlog. In the left-hand graph there, we have male and female. We have white and black. And you will see the red is the white and the blue is the black. You can clearly see here also that not only the backlog in the courses due to very restricted space, funding, etc. But you can also see there are efforts to increase the intakes at the lower level, and you can clearly see it depicted here where they are just in the NCO's formation, they are just so few whites, and the black groups in that environment is just, and you can see the pick there, 357 are waiting to do the course. On the right hand side we have male and female people waiting to do courses. Then and further on, in terms of the regulatory framework, the non-compliance to policy, the failure to selectively renew the contracts, the CCS contracts, primarily because the DoD has been unable to negotiate changes to the GPF in support of HR Strategy 2010. And as I've said, none or very little of the senior members were converted from LTS to CCSS. The MSDS members were not exited as originally intended by the strategy, primarily due to the huge exodus which we had previously. And therefore, we had to utilize the MSDS, take them up in the regular force in order to make up the numbers that we've lost. The consequences of complying to policy, the increased HR cost has not been met with increased operational fund allocation. Instead, previously budgeted operational funds were used to augment the HR budget. Black and female members who are identified as fast trackers add to the number of backlogged course attendees. And a combination of the increased recruitment and relatively reduced operational funds for presenting courses has resulted in a huge backlog of members with course qualifications. As we sit here, Jefferson, we have no funding left for this financial year in one of our outlying bases. A lot of the funds for subsistence and travel is taken up to go to medical services in the Gauteng region. So I think it's quite clear that also the drain, the impact that has on the courses as well. Then in terms of the specialist musterings, I've already given you an indication of those, but there they are again: pilots and navigators, engineers, command and control personnel, and technical personnel. Excuse me. All specialist musterings are impacted on by the same internal and external factors as we've already explained. A fact analysis covering all the specialists indicating the major areas of concern to be the quantity and the quality of the pool of school leavers. And we'll show you a graph or two on that now, Chairperson. Not enough high school students do both math and physical science, which is our requirement. If we go to slide 21, the one that's on the board now, one can quite clearly see that the pool from which we recruit for this specialist skills is indeed very small. This is the, if we consider the horizontal axis of this graph, just above the figures there, one can see that the 7 is I would think it's the what we had in the old days, the A's, and then the 6 is the B's and the C's, and the 4, when we get to 4, it's the D's. So one can see in 2010, at best, we could bargain on 15,000 in the country. And for us to be the employer of choice out of this 15,000, we have a very, very slim chance to recruit sufficient people. The next slide on 22, as I've said, we have to compete with a wide range of industries and academic institutions to attract pilot applications from this very small small supply countrywide. We intend to renew our relationship with the DNLA schools to assist those students who are interested in military aviation career to improve their matric results. In terms of recruitment, our processes, Chairperson, I must admit, is not what we what we would like it to be. This year we have two very important focus areas. One is recruitment, the other one is career management. But we definitely not the best or the brightest when it comes to this, and I will admit it any day. But we intend to, with the June school vacation next year, to try and start with a new process where you need to get in large numbers to be able to select a few very good ones. In 2008, or the courses of 2008, where we qualified the most aircrew, we had 1,200 people who came for the selection, and only then can you really select the best. And when you select the best, you almost guarantee that they will make the grade. Another thing which is really hampering us is the old way of the paper, using paper and faxes and letters to try to inform people when to report for selection. And with the new generations, that does not work. So we've already started. We have presented it, our initiative now, to the National Defence Force. We're busy with the police and Department of Labour to assist us for the databases and to screening of people. But it is partly the new generation who is electronically minded, and then we also have the rural applicants find it very, very difficult to communicate with us through the old ways. In terms of assessments, the assessments of candidate pupil pilots are amongst the most extensive in the SNDF, and it is set to meet the profile of the physical, psychological, intellectual demands of a combat pilot. Firstly, all candidates must do anthropometric measurements, which must be within the ejector seat specification. This seat is manufactured by a company called Martin Baker. Martin Baker supplies seats to almost all aircraft that fly with ejection seats in the world. So what we've done is we've done considerable research, and we are busy with a project. The project is already on the go to extend these limitations of the ejection seat, so that more females, especially more females, because they don't make the minimum weight of the ejection seat, so that especially more females can be eligible to fly on our aircraft. And we have set aside 63 million rand for that purpose. And then we find that a disproportionate number of black candidates with the right academic results and anthropometric measurements do not pass the pilot selection. We have, as our partners in selection, we have the medical services, and not only the physical medical, but also the psychological tests of the Military Psychological Institute. If we go to the next slide, it's just an indication, Chairperson, of the time it takes to train a fighter pilot. And it will give you an indication that if you're not totally in sync, then things can go terribly wrong. The generic career path for pilots up to the attainment of the wings takes 3 years and consists of basic military training, officers forming, military academy certificate, and ab initio flying. Then they are streamed into the combat, helicopter, and transport and maritime lines. And this table then shows what it is for the combat pilots.
Excuse me, General. Can you just take your time to take us through this particular?
I will do so, sir. Yeah. If I can go back then. So after we've recruited a member successfully, after recruited a member successfully, the member starts with basic military training, which is 6 months, officers formative, which is about 5 months, military academy of a year, and then another year of basic training. This training is not depicted on the slide as you see it there, because this is only for combat, the combat pilot. So when the person starts flying, the first 60 hours the person will do on a very basic aircraft, it's a Cessna 172. We recently started with that. It is to not only save money, because the Pilatus PC-7 is about a third, even more expensive than this aircraft, but also it's a very basic aircraft. People and the instructors sit next to one another, so it's very easy for the instructor to observe the performance of the student. Then they will go onto the Pilatus PC-7, which is here at our flying school at Air Force Base Langebaanweg. Once they qualify there, we keep them there, and this is serial number one on the slide there, for another 40 hours on the PC-7 to teach them the basics of combat flying. And this is one... And the overriding factor here is to cut costs. So what we say, instead of flying this person on a very expensive Hawk, let's rather fly this person these basic skills on a cheaper, relatively cheaper PC-7, and therefore the 40 hours. And then they go still in serial one. They're flying on the Hawk, and you will see then the next. A column is the flying hours, the simulator hours, you can see there, the functional, military functional courses that they have to do, academic courses, and then as they progress, the rank level, and then also their responsibilities in terms of their flying responsibilities, so to speak. So the first course then on the Hawk is the operational training course, which is 95 hours and 33 hours in the simulator. Now, Chairperson, this is, in previous language, this is almost unheard of. We've done a huge amount of work to download physical flying on simulator flying in order to cut on cost, but also to improve the efficiency and the training of our people. Just to give you an example, I don't want to belabor this point, but we managed to secure the use of a simulator for the Oryx helicopter from the Swiss Air Force. It was bought, positioned here, and we pay 8,000 rand an hour instead of 40,000 rand an hour on the Oryx. So really, we've done a huge amount of work, and you can see the relation there is great. Serial 2 has been... The qualified wingman.
Sorry to interrupt you again.
Certainly, sir.
Can you explain what the simulator is for the benefit of some?
I'm sorry. Please, you must stop me. For us, it's everyday speak, and I tend to forget that it's not everyday in your vocabulary. A simulator is a device which you find different levels of simulators. The more basic ones are the ones that are stationary, where you just have the instrumentation. You have a basic feel. It flies basically like the aircraft. And then as they become more involved and more expensive, they go more dynamic. For instance, on the Gripen, we have a half dome, so a half dome, and you can basically see 90 degrees either side of you. So you have a full view of what's going on ahead of you. If we take Air Force Base Makardu, the base, the area around Air Force Base Makardu is in the database. So when you're flying along, you can clearly see where you're going, and you can recognize mountains. So what we utilize this for is to prepare the students for the flight. On Gripen now, almost all the sorties are first flown in the simulator and then in the real aircraft. And then the top end of this is where you find the airline simulators, which has got movement. But it's very expensive, very big, and it's not our purpose. But here one can practice all the emergencies that you can get in an aircraft. You can practice all the flying that you need to do. You don't just don't leave the ground. So very, very important tool for our purposes. I will, so then, as in serial or year 3 to 4, these youngsters now on the Hawk, they will just increase their flying skills, and in year 5, they become eligible to go to Gripen. We have, when the aircraft were bought, we've Gripenized the Hawk, meaning that the instrumentation in the Hawk is almost the same as in Gripen, so the transition is very smooth and very easy. We can also, in that arrow, what that arrow depicts there, Chairperson, is that if we don't send a person to Gripen, we can also send this person to instructor's course. We go back to the PC-7 to be taught how to teach people in the air. Then one can see that after Gripen, it's instructor's course, and then people will come back in year 14 of their flying career back to Hawk, back to Gripen, to be instructors on those two aircraft. So if we go to slide 26, I'm not going to go into the bottom part of it, but the top part, just to show what we've done there. Also, we have outsourced the basic flying training to a Robertson R-22. It's a very, very simple helicopter, very cheap to operate, and they then start our training. So from there, they also do simulator, they fly the Oryx and Augusta A-109, and their path follows then that very simple process as depicted there. We think that we have, in slide 27, that we've achieved something with the engineers, where we have qualified 24 African engineers, 3 Indian, 2 colored, and then 12 white in the period under consideration. The majority of the student engineers, 70% of them are black, and the female student engineers still lacking somewhat. They are 15%. But if we go to the next slide, on slide number 28, Chairperson, we can see that although in the lower ranks we're doing quite well, in the same area, lieutenant, colonel, we sit with the same thing where these people are, it's got contracts, we can't exit them, we've got a problem there. However, in the engineer environment, there's still some space for movement up to major and even lieutenant colonel. So in time, they will be promoted. If we look at our representativity in command and control environment, and this is now people working in the control towers, people, the mission controllers, people that control fighter aircraft, communication people, all the likes, one can see that here we also made substantial improvements. About four or five years ago, we made a conscious decision that in this environment we will only recruit blacks, and for a period, and we can see the results from that. But, sir, the problem is that because the flying rate is so low, we cannot qualify these people. What we have is we have a very good relationship with the Air Traffic and Navigational Services, the civilians. We train together, we assist them because they basically have the same problem, and the intention is then that we send our people to their control towers where there's more flying to validate or to qualify. We've just included this slide, Chairperson, to show you the real problem and which is facing us and, in a way, the country as well. This is the total number of apprentices qualifying as artisans, and from the 70s up till 2004. And so you can see that from the 70s on the horizontal axis, you can see that there was a constant increase up till 86, then it almost stabilized, and then there was, now it's a constant decrease again, resulting in qualifying artisans only 2,500 rather than 2,004. Now this has a real, it's a real threat to us, because a country such as ours cannot survive on this. Our greatest fear is, and it shouldn't be, but when the economy picks up, that there will be again a huge exodus out of the Air Force to augment the numbers that are lacking in that slide. If you go to the next slide, you can see that our success in terms of recruiting and developing black technical officers has not yet reached the middle management levels due to the barriers in the system, as explained before. But you can see that in terms of lieutenants, 88%, captains about the same, majors, say 70% in total, but now we sit with the barrier. Technical NCOs, I think we have discussed it. You can see it also very clearly here from airmen down at the bottom, we are representativity in terms of technical NCOs as about 90%. We've got lance corporals the same, corporals a little bit less, sergeants even less, and then we hit the barrier as explained previously. It is very interesting to note that civilian companies hire corporals who've just completed their apprenticeship training and just qualified as an artisan. So you can immediately see there's already a decrease in our numbers. So, sir, if we then can wrap up by summarizing, we say that in terms of HR, development and utilization, the slow progress in meeting the race and gender representativity targets in aircrew, technical and airspace control environment, as well as in the senior supervisory and middle management levels, is directly linked to the reduced operational budget allocation. Young black and female specialists in the SAF cannot be fast-track exposure because of the constraint of not flying or not getting exposure. Affordability, the SAF is able to execute its mandate within the acceptable force design goal, and is not affordable because of the department allocation of funds and the high level of aviation inflation. And then in terms of operational readiness, we say that the SAF's operational readiness state is not steady and fluctuates due to the high levels of force employment, which results in reduced force preparation, in other words, training tasks. I wanted to show you a graph of the C-130's activities on the continent the last couple of months, but it is all over north, east, west, south, it shows you that in some areas there is extremely high demand, operational demand, and therefore we have to allocate funds there, and which impacts on the rest. If we go to the next slide, it's just a slide to indicate that we have where we indicate on the left the funding, on the right, on the horizontal axis the years, and as one can see, there's a steady increase in the numbers. The light blue is regular force, and the dark blue is the MSDS members. Our target for MSDS training is 1,000 per year. Therefore, at any one time there should be at least 2,000 in the system. If we consider then that in 2006 our HR budget was 1.4 billion, it's now escalated to 2.4 billion in 2011. And that coupled to the concurrent decrease in the attrition rate depicted by the red line, one can see the very high peak in 2008, and then it's the economic slowdown started, and we're sitting now with about 146 in that environment. So a real challenge for us. Sir, That brings us to the end of this presentation. I hope that we have given you enough and we've given you what you wanted to receive from us. But I have all the specialists here. If you have any questions, we will be glad to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. General, let me. I've noted you, honorable member. I've noted you, and I've noted you. That's right. Pardon?
Can I start?
Thank you. Yeah, I've noted you.
You have noted me, not that you will start from here too.
Okay. Honorable member, I will start this here. Yeah, I was just saying to General and the officers that basically our mandate is to deal with the transformation of the SANDF. So whether it's SAMS or it's Air Force, you know, Army and so on. So basically, that is our mandate. And in executing our mandate, we are going to zoom in and even go to an extent of meeting with the troops on the ground and interact with them. So in terms of the various levels of the forces, your department is the last one in terms of transformation. The Navy is leading right now, even in terms of women empowerment, it is leading. But they are going to be making a presentation to us. So we want to make sure that for the next foreseeable future, we'll be working with you very closely and monitoring you very, very closely, because we are worried about what is happening in your section. Very, very worried. Honorable?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thank you very much to the General and his entourage for this presentation. I just want to add also that it is shocking, very shocking, because 17 years, I understand what General Kagiano is saying, but the issue of, if we'll say, the issue of recession, it has contributed to this lack of transformation after 17 years. Recession is in the world. It's something that has started 2 years ago, if I'm correct. But what we see here, it's serious lack of transformation in SAAF. And I don't understand that why don't you have up to so far, because this thing has been preached, the question of the exit strategy. You say there's a serious problem where people can't leave the service. And you've got a fast-tracking kind of a program in terms of ranks, but you don't have the fast-tracking exit. So it creates a very serious problem. So I want to know, if are you working on trying to find a solution in terms of the exit strategy, because it doesn't help to have a fast-tracking kind of a mechanism if you can't have an exit strategy. The second issue will be the one that the Honorable Chair has raised. In terms of gender, I see blacks are very few, very, very few female blacks which are getting opportunities in this arm of faith. I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I'm also not shocked but disappointed about what is happening in the Air Force. And Chairperson, the Chief didn't give us the numbers. He referred to percentages. I'm someone who doesn't prefer percentages or color things. I prefer strict numbers to see what is happening in there. But to safe to say that the presentation doesn't contain what we wanted, and really he should have told us that we have 364 whites, 364 blacks, not going with percentages, because percentage we can have different perceptions without having a consistent number. And I'm a little bit worried, because time is running out of us, and this presentation, we have to deal with it. If you can, on the other time, give us this presentation, because we just got it in yesterday late. We didn't go through it, so that we go and read this thing, and then we call him back on the other time. I don't know what other members are saying. It's only a suggestion, but I'm really disappointed on transformation. There's no transformation in South African Air Force. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. General and your general, Kenneth. Chair, I've always wanted to ask this question. Is it by design that the defense, when it comes to present, it's only generals or senior members? What about the members who actually get their hands dirty? Of course, I'm not saying you must abdicate the command structure and all of that. I've always asked that. I somewhat forget to ask that question. Chair, in terms of the presentation, I must say, I will go exactly where the members have already voiced their disappointment, their shock, that this presentation, it only has two things: the challenges, that which we do not have, and that which we might have. It does not talk to what we have. And of course, it's attributing the challenges that are there to the HR Strategy 2010 for one. In a number of slides, it's talking about disadvantages due to the limited aviation qualifications of the NSF and TBVC. It's attributing it again to the backlog of the middle management. And of course, it is not disputing the fact that it is not following policy in terms of one member or officer being in one rank, as in a number that are prescribed in terms of policy. It also talks to recruit. In fact, it does not correctly give us a sense of how members or how it recruits, except the MSDS. It does not give us a picture of the instructorate that it has, and of course the question of the demographics thereof. The Honorable Member has already alluded to the fact that it talks percentages in terms of actual numbers. It gives a sense of a lack of interest in terms of actual transformation. Because the presentation does talk to transformation management in the South African effort. it does not show us how the CEF tends to synchronize its work in terms of its needs with other government departments. It has mentioned a few government departments, but I did not see anything with the Department of Education, whether it's the higher education and the other Department of Education. It does not tell us how long are these challenges going to persist. Even though in the annual report we are told that the Air Force did meet and exceed its flying hours, but now we are learning that others were not met. I don't know where does that come from. And of course, it talks to the question of using assimilation, which is, in my view, it is good before you start having pilots in a machine that is expensive and that might encounter challenges later on. Assimilation will be one way to go. It goes on and on, Chair, with all these challenges and what which we might have in the future without specification, does not have time frame in it. And finally, Chair, I did ask two questions when we were getting the annual report. That I had hoped that answer will be in this presentation. That at the beginning of a training, you have a number of people that will be starting a training. By the end of the training, you have a lesser number. And we do not have the specifics of what is the problem with this. Even though we were given an answer to say there were challenges of failure and all, but it does not really and clearly come out as to what are these challenges and how are these members are therefore assisted in terms of making sure that then they do qualify at the end of the day, because we have a challenge across all governments of the government departments of scarce skills. And if we have put aside finances to train people in these skills that are scarce, and at the end of the day, we do not feel full that, what then are we doing? The second question, Chair, was, the general there was trying to explain to us in one slide, how long does it take the CEF to train air pilot and other specified qualifications, we have engineering and all other skills there. But at the end of the day, after we have trained these members, do we then have contracts that are tight enough to keep them, to serve us after we have trained them? We have heard from HR that they do have this soft contract and other contracts. But it does not seem to be a concern then to the Armed Forces Service that these contracts then are making sure then thereafter that they service after. After we have put money on the table to train these members. I must say, Chair, for me, this presentation really does not give us what we want to know. And for the mere fact that you are specialists in your field, you are supposed to be giving us what you think can be done or have an elaborated plan that says this is how we think we can then close the gap. And then for us, we see what is it that we can do to help you fulfill that mandate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think I am equally frustrated, like my colleagues, that this report does not give exactly what we want. And maybe... as the General has said, that the rank mobility is impeded by the fact that there is no vacancy in the senior management. I would like to be personal. maybe ask him directly, when does he see himself leaving and giving over to one of the people who are accompanying him? I think in that case, maybe it will respond to what we don't understand about this report. When does he see himself leaving and giving over to one of these gentlemen? Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. One day we have attended their program while they were celebrating the Women's Day, and the program director was a male person. Everybody who was participating on the program, all of them were the male. So I don't want to say anything more. My colleague have already said a lot, but I just want to say, as they saw, because of this, of their emblem, it's like when the eagle saw, it doesn't leave anybody behind. But my request is that, can they take the ladies with them? Like today, we all see men. I don't know whether Abaku would do to a Tovana, because they're just alone. You see, no, this is really stressing. But this emblem says a lot. Can they soar with the ladies? Thank you.
General, I would like to take you to page 7. The latter part of page 7, the phenomena that are the transformation, about unintended barriers. There are quite a number of unintended barriers. I'll come back to that. And also the issues of non-compliance to policy. And thereafter, the consequences of not complying, obviously, with policy. firstly, there's a problem with the manner in which the AMG is supposed to be utilized. Because what I understand about your AMG is that it is supposed to provide for scarce skills that most of the personnel that is experienced, that have retired, that have left, when those people come in to tutor and nurture the young ones, they have to be paid that particular type of, allowance. But now, the problem is, firstly, with the contracts of these people. The retired officials, when they come back into the system, their contracts don't seem to be properly standardized. If you could be able to explain that to us. Because if they keep on coming with the rare skills, which obviously are required, but don't plow back to ensure that even the young pilots, are able to benefit from them, but they come in to replace the young pilots and do the duties that are expected to be done by the young pilots. It means the young pilots are not going to be able to develop. Therefore, those who have retired come back and close the space of those who are aspirant and want to learn. That becomes a problem. Now, secondly, on the page 17. Page 17 is very clear in terms of the seniority. The demography here continues not to be ideal. You still have a lot of blacks at the bottom. When you look at the sketch on the left, and you still have a lot of very senior okay, it's male and they are white. So all we are saying is taking you back to your page 7. The policy is very clear on transformation. But again, it's clear that the non-compliance with the policies of the DOD within the South African Air Force actually perpetuate a situation in which you have got a recycling of this most experienced white personnel within the force. Now, colleagues are saying you haven't as yet come up with a strategy that would actually ensure that there's a rigorous transformation agenda that you put before us. The only other issues that one can raise general, our problems with respect to the manner in which funds are utilized. It is the AMG and the MISIP. If you could be able to explain to us how that funding is being utilized. We don't want personnel who is not supposed to receive allowances to receive those allowances. Now, with respect to the issue of women, let's have the same understanding that in Langebaan, for instance, and Waterkloof, you won't have a situation wherein, including Littleton, you won't have situations in which they will be complaining about the size of African women, that African women cannot fly aircraft because they don't fit in the cockpit. When we go to address August celebration of women, women flight pilots express themselves about the problems that they have. They cannot be able to make the necessary flying hours. And obviously, if they cannot be able to do that within a certain period, it means they're going to fall by the wayside. Now, we want to see the type of program that would be able to accommodate African women. Because all these are young people who are putting their lives in defense of their own country. Now, the other problem is the commercial F-right and the company that is being sourced by the Air Force. The same company provided an aircraft to the Deputy President. That got stuck somewhere in Africa. But nevertheless, the Air Force went to the same company to source another aircraft for the Deputy President. And again, the Deputy President got stuck. Why is it that the same company is being utilized by the Air Force? There are quite a number of companies that can be able to provide proper, you know, commercial aircraft. But there is this consistent relationship and business interaction between this company in particular and the Air Force. Why is that? You can take this particular type of questions, and then we'll come to the last round before we close.
There's caucus as well. And you see there's a lot of questions, and I'm sure that the general with their responses will take this thing up to 10. And you know caucuses start at 10. But let me, can I put mine in the meantime? Chairperson, you know, I hope and pray, and I'm serious when I'm saying this, I hope and pray that one day, before I die, the issue of race will vanish from South Africa. The issue of race. You see, because we are 17 years in a democracy, but when you get documentation like this, still talking about colored, white, Indian, and black, is very disturbing. We are not living, we will not leaving a legacy for our children. And I'm saying that I hope that one day, before I die, when people come to present, they must present about Africans, all of us. It's not a good thing to present a document like this. I understand they want to show that, but it's our duty as members of parliament to correct that situation, to say that all of us, we are striving for them. The Freedom Charter is talking about black and white, not other people, black and white. And we must see to it. But let me come to my question, Chair. You see, on page 30, the general was saying that on 11/12, 299, the attrition, 229 is leaving. Now the Air Force. Now you see, it's very disturbing. My question will be, what do they think is the reason for this type of thing? I mean, the Air Force is depleting. The Air Force, and it's a very important and sensitive area. We must have the Air Force intact. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, honorable members, it's true that at 10 we'll be having caucuses. And we won't have sufficient time to interact with the general and official and the officers. We can make a proposal that within the next month before Parliament closes, we could have another interaction with the F1. So we will try to put that in our program to make sure that we interact more with the officials in the SA force. General and the officials, you only have 15 minutes. It's unfortunate, but we will make another time within which we can be able to. Thank you. In 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Yeah, you can be able to isolate some of the issues. Issues that have not been covered, we will continue with our meeting within the next month.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I should start with the Honourable Member who asked when I now will leave. I retired in March, the end of March. But then, just before that, we had quite a huge turnover in our senior leadership. And the minister felt it prudent to, for the sake of stability, just to appoint me for another year. So that contract is coming to an end at the end of March. So it's really not because I'm trying to overstay my welcome. I was reappointed by the president, and it was due to a huge turnover in our senior management. Just to clear that, the reason why I'm still sitting here. Chairperson, I take note, and I think we all take serious note of your concern, or your concerns. The fact is that there's not a day where we grapple with this problem. It seems to us that our long-term plans are not coming to fruition, and our short-term plans are just not improving the situation. The fact that we don't have a gender representation here with us today, sometimes we forget it, but we thought we will bring the people who work directly with the strategy, with the plans, to bring that. Our senior leadership in terms of our females, they're in the communication, our policy people, and supply and support. And yes, we were wrong. We should have brought them along. It's off. We shouldn't have done it. It's not a good sign. It's not a doesn't show intent. And I apologize for that. We will try as far as possible to go through the questions. What I would recommend, Chairperson, is that we've all now taken down your concerns, your questions. Perhaps we should draw up a paper for you, and then we can pass it on, and then for you to study so long, and then at your wish we can come back at a later stage. But I think then you will have already up front have a better understanding and a better insight into the real numbers. The member also mentioned that you do not want percentages, but rather numbers. We've tried here at the back at where we the commander control. We've got real numbers there. Engineers, we've got real numbers. We've tried that with the pilots. We have a slide, but we decided it's too busy. That perhaps we. We're not going to be able. You're not going to be able to get the real feeling, but we will make a simplified that and show you the real issues, the real achievements, but also the real failures. Chairperson, I think I'm not going to respond now on the comments of the serious lack of transformation. I think we take it to heart, and we will. We will run with that one. And the numbers I've commented. Why no junior members? I think it's we felt that the people who work with us and engage on this on a daily basis that we should bring them along. The actual numbers we will definitely supply you with. Other departments, yes, we are engaging other departments. You can see that we're using other departments, some of these statistics, to indicate to you the challenges that we have. But we will, again, give you all the feedback that we have on that. I'm very mindful of the time now. Perhaps the contracts, after we've trained people, do we supply them with contracts? General Masters, do you want to, in the HR environment, do you want to comment on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I think that we are seriously challenged with the issue of our contract management. And it is related to exiting the older senior people who, as we've shown, the majority of whom are white males. Now, this is where the challenge is for us. It is not cheap to exit people, and because of the past practice of giving them a contract until age 60. They wish to be offered a package which makes it worth their while to leave. And I think the Department of Defense, not just the Air Force, has made attempts to be able to use the provisions in the Government Employees Pension Fund rules to exit those people. And that kind of exiting cannot be done by the Air Force on its own, and it cannot be done by the Department of Defense alone. It requires the support of the Department of Public Service Administration, and it requires the support of National Treasury. And it has a cost. And that cost is that there has to be somehow implemented across other government departments also. So we have not been able to use clause 14.1.1c, for instance, of the GPF rules to exit a number of the senior people. But this is the express intent of the Air Force, to exit those senior people, because the only way in which we can get the younger people who are predominantly black, who are predominantly female, into the senior position is if we can make space at the top. And I think that is the dilemma which we are faced with, that our intent cannot be affected within the powers of the Air Force's mandate. We cannot apply the rule just ourselves, and then it also doesn't go without an immediate cost. So I think it lies in that in the fact that we have a burgeoning HR budget, and that burgeoning HR budget has an impact on our operational budget, and the impact on the operational budget means less force preparation hours, less development. You can see, and the frustration, I think, which we've heard from the members here is the frustration that we feel in the Air Force. It is an absolute need for us to try and move the more senior people out. An absolute need, because that is the way we will give opportunities to younger people. And I think we are fairly much in agreement with respect to our disappointment that we cannot affect these things. But there is the serious problem that we have a legacy where the seniors, both in the supervisory level and in the middle management level, have contracts until they are 60. And they seem not to feel very comfortable, as people felt maybe earlier, in taking the packages which was offered, which means that they get the actuarial value and not a pension for life. So I think it is those things which we is not within our powers, but I think we know what the solution must be. And at the moment, it's a question of can we afford it? Not in terms of can the Air Force afford to let these people go. We are developing people to take their place, but we don't have the mechanisms available to us. No, thank you very much. May I just say very quickly that we really appreciate the good work that the Air Force senior management has been doing, because some of the personnel are quite pleased about the type of training that they receive. And let's also thank General Khashlyan for having been there for the South African Air Force, most in particular during the period of integration. So we appreciate the good work that he has been able to do thus far, and most in particular to ensure that South Africa still continues to have a very, very proud Air Force that is respected across Africa in particular. And now there are things that I want us to look at as the delegation here. In discussing policy, there must not be an extension of retirement years from 60 to 65 or 65 to 70. So the issue of extension of retirement years for personnel, that should not be considered, because obviously right now we have a problem. You know, we don't have an exit mechanism. So it means you are going to be piling a lot of elder people within the Air Force. So no extension of retirement age. And then two, the issue of Zimbabwean instructors who are continuing to assist South Africa in training the young ones. That is another issue that we should also look at, because most of the African students are quite comfortable with the Zimbabwean instructors in terms of a number of things. You know, it's easy in language, it's easy in tutoring, you know, in culture and so on. So if you have been contemplating to do away with the Zimbabwean instructors, make sure that you keep them for the time being, because from the report that we have received from the African and Black pilots, they are quite comfortable. And then thirdly, the issue of the commercial flight for the Deputy President, that issue must be looked at, because every time we read newspapers about the Deputy President having missed appointments and so on, it doesn't reflect well, you know, on our country. So if you could attend to some of those issues, together with honorable members, we will put time aside, and then we will be able to call the chief and the officials to engage more on a number of other issues. But for now, I believe we can adjourn our meeting, honorable members, and then thank General Castellano again for having made himself available when the chief went to report. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Because there's one name which is
yes, it is Masters.
Masters. And his initial?
Cedric. C. Masters.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else?
Six months.
No, you didn't have a TV.
Oh, I don't know.